And so, like I said, our students go to the food bank every day, and that's where they work. And they get so good at that job that, so most of the food bank is really, the labor is run by volunteers. So big companies like Insperity or AT&T, things like that, they will bring their whole team and hundreds of people to volunteer for the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know who ends up teaching them what to do?
Your students.
Our students. It's awesome. So these are young adults with autism or intellectual disabilities, you know, some challenges. But they have gotten so good at what they do that they're the supervisors then of these groups of people. And it's so cool to see.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Dr. Ryan Wheeler. Ryan is the Executive Director of Special Services at Channelview ISD, and Channelview is in Texas. So, Ryan, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about Channelview and your role there.
Certainly. So I like to say that Channelview is 15 minutes east of Houston. When I say Channelview, nobody knows where that's at. But as soon as I say 15 minutes east of Houston, you can kind of park that in your head geographically of where we're located. So we're a very urban school district. We are 84% Hispanic and about 86% socioeconomically disadvantaged. Our enrollment actually has been dropping a little bit every year over the past 5 years. We're right about 9,100 students altogether now. And we were just under 10,000 a couple of years ago. But what is crazy is that we are bursting at the seams identifying students with disabilities. So we've grown 40% post-COVID of our special education numbers. We were at just under 1,000 and now we're well over 1,500.
Wow. Wow. So your utilization is probably what, 18, 19% then?
17%. Exactly.
17%. Yeah. I was trying to do that math really fast in my head.
You were so close.
At 10,000, the math was easy. At 9,000, not so much.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we're looking at those numbers all the time. And I mean, just for some context, even now, we have 97 initial evaluations in the queue that we're working on.
My goodness.
And we're at the end of October. So we have a whole school year left to go.
Wow, that's incredible. That is really incredible.
We're working hard out here.
So when you're east, you've got to be a little bit north too, right? Because when I think of east of Houston, I think of water, the Gulf. But I guess, are you guys on the water then?
No. Well, I mean, no? we're on a waterway. We're on, okay. on the San Jacinto River.
Yeah.
So. Okay. The Gulf of Mexico, Gulf of America, whatever it's called these days, is about an hour and a half south. Depends on how fast you drive.
Okay. Because I'm in Corpus Christi and we're on the Gulf, right on the Gulf. We're in the coastal bend, as they like to call it. So I'll have to look at a map. I'll have to look it up.
That's okay.
Houston's not exactly on the water, is it, I guess?
No.
I think of it on the water. I don't know why I think of that, but.
It's just a geographic area.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those megalopolises, right? It's just Houston and, right? Yeah,
exactly. So, yeah. There's that meme that says, where are you from? I'm from Houston. And they're like, where in Houston? And then you'll say, I'm from Pasadena. And they're like, where in Pasadena? And, you know, because you just keep drilling down to figure out, you know, is it going to take me an hour to get over to you if we try to hang out?
Yeah. And it's not small and I've been through Houston. I've been into Houston. My sister-in-law lives in Sugar Land. So, you know, but it's too big for me. I'll be honest. It's too big for me. I love that there, but it seems like there's pockets of, you know, it's not just Houston. It's pockets of communities, which is kind of neat. And Texas is really good about communities, which is really an amazing thing. So anyway,
it's a great place.
Yeah, obviously. Awesome. So tell us about, so you've got all of these assessments. So how are you handling and what are your goals or what are you guys working on there?
Sure. So, you know, we really have a robust early identification process. We're really trying to get those students identified as early as possible. In Texas, we have a rule. It's called 3 is 3. So if we suspect they have a disability, we need to have them evaluated by age 3. And then we can start providing services and we can do evaluations 4, 5, 6, you know, however old the student is. What we really try to avoid is those parents showing up on the first day of school saying, here's my son for kindergarten. He doesn't talk. here's his bag of diapers and here's the three foods he eats. And we're wow, you know, you're 5 years old and we could have been helping you out for years. Mm-hmm. So we really expanded that child find to all kinds of entities. We've published videos. I've given talks to all the local churches and church leaders to try to, because they're big in the community, you know, to try to put it out there about just the opportunities available for evaluation for special education. Because like I said, early intervention is the best thing. But the most important thing and what I'd really like to kind of hang most of our conversation on today is post-secondary transition. Okay. And looking at what those students are going to do when it's time for them to graduate high school and leave. And that's where I think we really thrive is beginning with the transition, beginning with the end in mind and making sure that transition is taken into account as early as is appropriate for a student.
Right, right. Finding out what their desires are, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I love that.
And in Texas, the rule is that we have to look at transition for students by their 14th birthday. Federally, it's by their 16th birthday. So we start having those conversations well in advance of their 14th birthday. But even more so, we're really working on building those self-advocacy skills that are going to help an individual just in life. Because, you know, they're in school only until they're 18 years old or so, right?
Right.
But they're an adult for the whole rest of their lifespan.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And if you're an individual with a disability in school, and you need an IEP to graduate, you're always going to be an individual with a disability. You just need to have the skills to ameliorate the effects of it. So all that we can do to pour into a student to help them out, to make them to be as potentially as successful as they can when they graduate, is that's our whole purpose. And so we're always thinking about how we can build a system that can benefit students so that they are ready to leave with skills in mind. And one thing that I always say is we don't want to graduate students to the couch.
Yeah.
It is way too common across the world, probably. We'll talk about the United States, where a student graduates with an IEP and we say, congratulations, here's your diploma, good luck.
Yeah.
And did we adequately prepare them for what comes next?
Right. Yeah, because there's a lot that's happening for those that are in gen ed. You know, there's a lot of programs and transitions and talking about getting. And I've talked to a lot of schools about what they're doing. And it's amazing. I mean, there really is amazing things. Kids are graduating with associate's degrees and certificates. So what kinds of how did it come about? And what kinds of things do you guys have in place?
Okay, where to start? I like to say that I never want to be a destroyer of dreams. So we take students' ideas into account, of course, when we're planning for whatever their post-secondary success is going to look like. But you have to remember that these are kids and their role models are what they see on TV or in the community or in a movie. So their breadth of understanding of the opportunities that are available is pretty small, right? So I'll give a quick story. I had a student one time that he wanted to be a professional wrestler. And, you know, but he was not built like John Cena. He,
right.
You know, was not 6'4", 280 pounds. He was probably happy to be 5'5", just a little guy. But he loved the idea of being a professional wrestler. And again, like I said, I'm not a destroyer of dreams. So we started having conversations and got him connected with an agency that helped him get into wrestling camps during the summer, where they're practicing all the moves, jumping off the ring and hitting the ropes and bouncing off the mat and learning how to do all those things safely. And so when he graduated, did he go on and join the professional world, WWE, whatever it's called these days?
Right.
No. But what he did is he became a stunt extra in movies because
wow.
He learned all the skills that it took of how to take a fall safely, how to make it look real. And so that's what he does. He's in movies and TV shows and he's a stunt double. And that's pretty awesome that we listened to what his passion was and then aligned him in a pathway that could be sustainable and right. Something that he's going to be find to be successful throughout his life.
Wow. That's amazing. That is really amazing. So, so you look at their dreams, you listen to what they want, and then you set up a program. How do you do that part? I mean, how did you find him a place where he could go and learn those skills?
Yeah, so a lot of that is community partnerships. And mm-hmm. We have a lot of great partnerships both in the district and out of the district. I'll talk about some of the in-district ones we do first. So very recently, I gave a training, my team and I, can't take all the credit, of course, on Universal Design for Learning, and we engineered it towards the career and technical education teachers. And I started off the conversation by just listing out some data points for the CTE teachers. I talked about how when I got in this role, that on the State Performance Plan Indicator 14 report, that looks at post-secondary outcomes 1 year after a student graduates high school. And there's a question on there that asks students if they went on to some type of post-secondary educational opportunity, like college, university, junior college, whatever, did they access the Office of Disability Rights? And so I would say if a student needed an IEP in high school and they want to go on to some type of post-secondary education, they're going to need supports in that realm as well, right?
Right.
And that the answer to that question was that before I got here, 0% of students had access to Office of Disability Rights, even though they had accommodation supports in high school, right? And now we're at about 50%, which is not 100%, but it's better. It's a lot better.
Right. Yeah.
And because we have really been honing in on empowering students in the four pillars of self-advocacy theory, and those four pillars are knowledge of self, knowledge of rights, communication, and leadership. And if you can, if you know who you are and you know what your challenges are and you can advocate for what you need, you stand a way better chance of being successful. So to that point, we really work on including students in their IEP meetings at as early of an age as possible. So I use my own kids as examples all the time, probably much to their dismay, but mine too. they're the best examples, right?
Yep.
My youngest has had an IEP since he was in first grade, and he's attended every one of his IEP meetings since second grade. And that way he knows. He knows why he gets pulled out to dyslexia class. He knows why the speech therapist comes and works with them. And he knows why he gets in-class support for reading. And I always say that special education isn't what we do to students, it's what we do with them.
Right.
And they have to be an active participant in all of those processes. Otherwise, you're just trying to do stuff to kids and you're not going to be very successful at it because they don't even know what you're doing nor why.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just trying to empower all the people. So back to the Universal Design for Learning training with the CTE teachers, I just gave them a lot of data points about how our students can really benefit from those programs. And I told them that if you're a student with a disability in high school, your favorite class is probably not going to be the ones that are the ABCs of 1, 2, 3s. It's not going to be biology or pre-AP, pre-physics or something, some crazy class like that. It's going to be your CTE program for the most part.
Right.
And I said, the students picked you. They picked your program because they want to learn marketing. They want to learn auto technology. They want to learn culinary skills. And so they're the most excited to come to those classes. And so what we taught them was just how to differentiate instruction, how to make it accessible for all learners, how to take different learning modalities into account, and really focusing on the output product of demonstrating mastery of the content and allowing students to be really creative in their selection of what they're going to do instead of everybody doing the same thing, because we're not all going to create a project in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And let's honor the student and their creativity. We're just asking them to have that allowability in using some of those UDL principles to help the students access those programs.
Right. Yeah. And then I'm assuming you have lots of community partners then as well that are working with those kids within those programs, right?
Absolutely. So those classes are taught by industry professionals, people who know who. It's not a former chemistry teacher who decided to go teach auto tech. It's someone who is an expert in that field and has worked to get probably an alternative certification in both cases, or through District of Innovation allowances to teach that class because they're an expert in auto tech.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So they have those skills. We're just teaching them the teacher skills.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they have a job. They have a job. So how do you deal with transportation then?
Okay. So we have special transportation, you know, that runs all throughout the district. And so that's all depending on if the student needs that special transportation or not. And then just an IEP committee decision, and then we provide that.
Right.
So
that's good.
I'll track it now to a couple other really cool programs that we have. And our 18 plus program, that's our post-secondary transition program for our students with disabilities. And these are the ones who've earned all their high school credits and they've done whatever they need to do on their end of course tests and that type of thing. So essentially they're ready to graduate, but they're still working on independent living or vocational skills. So, they might stay with us for a year, they might stay with us for 2 years. It just depends on the student and their needs. But we have a couple of really cool programs that support those students. So we try to make it feel like they're not coming to high school anymore because they're not here for science class and history class. They're here for independent living or vocational skills. So we have a really cool schedule set up for them that 3 days a week, they actually trek themselves across the street to the early childhood center and work in the nutrition services department. So they do all the things alongside the cooks and the team there of prepping meals, cleaning up the meals, taking care of the tables, all the work that goes into nutrition services department. Mm-hmm. And so that's 3 days a week. So they're getting real hands-on on the job training for those skills. Mm-hmm. With the thought that maybe that's something that goes on a resume, that they've been practicing this for a whole year worth of experience and that they could do this, and this independently. Mm-hmm. And then on Wednesdays, they go to our district print shop and they do everything that involves printing and binding and publishing, just all the work that goes into that. And that's it's a really fun day for the students. But I got an email from the print shop manager recently that said that's what she looks forward to most every week. Is that time, that block when the students come over there.
Are you struggling to keep speech therapy fully staffed or tired of high turnover? You're not alone. At Lighthouse Therapy, our speech language pathologists are seasoned professionals, and most of them have over 16 years of school-based experience. They're not just qualified, they're consistent, relational, and results-driven. We offer three flexible delivery models: virtual therapy, hybrid therapy, and in-person therapy. It's speech therapy done right for you and your students. Learn more at lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together.
Yeah.
That's so great. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Keep going.
That's okay. No, what question did you have?
No, I was just going to say it's ownership. She's taking ownership of what she's doing with those kids. And I love that because when you have that kind of buy-in, you know, it's like there's just when you're welcomed in to a place, no matter your ability or disability, you know, it makes it so much better. It just makes it so some people have an ability to go into any environment and make themselves feel welcome. But this is something that kids with special needs, a lot of them don't understand that and don't know how to do that and don't even realize sometimes that they're welcomed or they're not. But they feel it. You know, they really do feel that. And so when you have somebody that takes ownership of being with them and is excited to see them, it just opens up the world for them and makes it easier for them to learn and to love what they're doing. And that's that. You can't buy that. You can't buy it, which is great. I love that for your kids. I really do.
I can't help but just tell stories and little asides all the time. But
absolutely.
We had a student. He actually came to the U.S. when he was almost 18. So, you know, he came with no credits. And we worked real hard. He's in a life skills type of setting. And we worked really hard to get him his credits and get him to the point of where he can get a diploma. And that took a lot of work, right? And we're having the conversations about what's he going to do next? Because, again, we don't want them to graduate to the couch. And he said, his parents helped share with us that he wanted to be a computer programmer. But, you know, that requires a high level of technical skill in order to be a computer programmer. But what it really boiled down to is he loves technology. He loves working with computers, right? So what we did is we got him, we had him do an interview with the technology department and the techs who fix all the Chromebooks and iPads at the high school. Well, and mm-hmm. he did his interview. And afterwards he said, "Did I get the job?" And we're like, "Yeah, buddy, you did, man. You got the job." And what it was is now he has an internship working right alongside the techs at the high school of fixing all those Chromebooks and iPads. And he loves it. And it's exactly what he wants to do. But we're giving him a job skill that he could take down the street and work at the cell phone repair place, you know, changing out charging ports and things like that. It's a technical skill. It doesn't require a whole high level of intellect in order to do it, but it's a real job.
Yeah.
And we're just really trying to prepare him for that.
a real job that I can't do. I'll tell you that right now. I have a whole tech department. My family loves to tease me, like, Mom, because we're a family company. My husband's our CTO, and my son and my daughter, my two older children, have worked with me since day one. And my youngest, he'll say, I did too, Mom, but I was young. I was in high school. So, you know, and it has been that way since, I mean, we're 7 years old. We were 7 years old in July. And they love to tease me because they're like, Mom, out of all of us, you're the CEO, but you are the least technologically intelligent out of all of us. And yet you run, you know, we're a teletherapy company for the most part. So, you know, but it's like, hey, I don't care. I put really smart people all around me to do the things that I don't know how to do. And that's what you do. You teach and you teach to the strengths, right?
Exactly. Yeah. A couple of other really cool things that we're doing is my district is super supportive of my wild ideas. And when I onboarded, I didn't like what they were doing as far as their 18 plus program as it was. And so they gave me permission to just change it and make it work for the students. So they're really being prepared. And one thing that we did was we partnered with a local company called Aura Prefab, and it's owned by Russell and Rame Huruska. They're University of Houston graduates. Russell's mom was a special education teacher. And Russell and I worked really hard together to create a learning space that we call the Living and Learning Lab. And what it is, it's a one-bedroom, one-bath house. It's about 736 square feet. And it's right outside the back door of the high school. And it's a tiny house. It's beautiful. I'd be happy to send you some pictures. It's amazing. I would be proud to live in it. It's so pretty. And it's an actual real home. So our students get to practice their independent living skills, not in a clinical classroom, sterile type of setting. Mm-hmm. They get to practice their independent living skills in a real house. And it's just such an awesome project. I never have really time on my schedule, but I found myself with a Friday morning one time that wasn't booked, and I had a couple of hours free. And so I contacted the teacher and I said, hey, I'm gonna pick up 5 students tomorrow and we're gonna go make waffles. And we call it the L3, the Living and Learning Lab. And so that's what I did. I stopped at Kroger on the way in, got all the things and picked up my students, and we went and we made waffles and hung out and drank coffee. And then we sat down as a family together and ate them at the table and just talked and hung out. And it was just such a beautiful morning. And the students had an awesome time. They got to partner together. They got to laugh and they had just such a good time. But that's their learning space. You know, that's their classroom is in a real house. And research shows that those students with intellectual disabilities or autism, they really learn through repetition in an authentic environment. So they can have a hard time generalizing skills across a classroom to the house.
Right.
But now we're not worrying about that because they're practicing all their skills in a house.
In a house. Yes. Wow.
And it's such an amazing opportunity, and we love to get to showcase that.
And that's why on the job training is so incredibly important for those kids too, because they need to be within that environment where it's going to matter. You know, and they can, they're super intelligent. Some, you know, especially kids with autism, some of them are just, wow, they pick it up so fast, but they just need that support, you know? And I love the fact that we as a society are recognizing that neurodivergence is a real thing. And that if you can figure out how to help this child to be successful outside of the classroom in a real world situation, then they can have, can be successful and can, you know, and it's amazing. It's really amazing. And they can be members of society that are contributing members of society. And that was not something probably 30 years ago that we thought we could do. And now we're doing it. And it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. So
yeah, I love getting to see individuals with disabilities just out being awesome in the regular world. Our favorite movie theater, there's a gentleman who works there. And you're old enough like me to remember movie phone, where you would call the number and it would say, hello, welcome to movie phone. So the gentleman who works there very clearly has autism, and he sounds just like the movie phone voice guy. But he is the happiest person in the whole world. And he is like, he's completely independent and an amazing worker in that space. And we go to that movie theater, not because it's not even the best movie theater. It's actually not even that great. But we go there because he's there and he just makes you feel so welcome. And he's excited to see everybody he encounters. And he'll have that job for the whole rest of, he'll have his job as long as they'll let him. He'll have that job for, he'll be the best employee, will never miss a day, and he'll work there forever. And they'll never have to worry about that role because he's got it locked down.
Yeah.
Someone taught him along the way to be, you know, independent in that way. And he's just thriving. And that'll take me to my next arm of our transition program. So I described the AIM program already. That's the one where they have the internships, you know, like the nutrition services and the print shop. But then we have the RISE program, and that's kind of the next extension of that 18 plus is our students, they'll ride the bus and get to school, and they go to the cafeteria at the high school and they have breakfast. But then they go to a different line and they pick up their lunch for the day. And they take their lunch with them and they get on a bus and they go to the Houston Food Bank. And the Houston Food Bank is their classroom. And I don't know if you've ever been to or seen the Houston Food Bank. It is just the most incredible building. It's like a million square feet. I'm not even exaggerating that. And within that space, they do all the jobs. They do everything that's there. They do all of the intake of the donated products. They work in the warehouse of putting things, the big boxes of stuff on the shelf. They'll get in a shipment of 1,000 pounds of sweet potatoes and then bag them up into 3-pound bags for distribution to the community. They work in the kitchen doing the Meals on Wheels after school programs. They have a cafeteria there and they work in the cafeteria serving the food as well as at the checkout line. They work in the food pantry where people put in their online order just like they would for HEB or Kroger. And they say they want, you know, 2 packs of the hamburger meat and, you know, 3 milks and some sweet potatoes, whatever's on the menu, right? So the students, they go and they make the order, bag it up, put the label on it. And then when the person pulls up in the car to pick up their order, they take it out, hand it to them, put it in the car, greet them with a smile, all those customer services pieces. And they do all this just with, there's always a staff member there supervising them. We have a job coach
that
them every day.
Yeah.
But they're being coached by a program called the HEART program. And the HEART program supports individuals with disabilities in job skills. So the HEART program is really awesome. So they work with our students while they're still technically students, but they can work with them afterwards as well. And the HEART program, they run the Papa John's at Houston Rockets games. They have their own CVS training store where individuals with disabilities train in order to be ready to walk into a CVS and just do the job perfectly with minimal supervision. So they have just a lot of awesome programs, but we have that partnership because you asked about community partners too. We have that partnership with the HEART program. And so, like I said, our students go to the food bank every day and that's where they work. And they get so good at that job that, so most of the food bank is really, the labor is run by volunteers. So big companies like Insperity or AT&T, things like that, they will bring their whole team and hundreds of people to volunteer for the day. You know who ends up teaching them what to do?
Your students.
Our students. It's awesome. So these are young adults with autism or intellectual disabilities, you know, some challenges. But they have gotten so good at what they do that they're the supervisors then of these groups of people. And it's so cool to see. And then one other really neat thing that they do in that space is they do all of the vending machines. And that's a whole industry, if you've never really considered it, be a great side hustle. But vending machines take a lot of skill in as much as the maintenance of the machine, but also taking care of all the money. But what also they do is they do product placement. So they'll look and they'll see that the purple font is not selling, and they'll take that down and replace it with something else. Or they'll reposition things in the machine so more things are front and center that's going to sell a lot, or, you know, whatever, based on the inventory. But they take that inventory and keep track of what sells, what doesn't sell. And then they go to Sam's Club and they restock based on the data of what is popular, what's not popular. And then they go and take it back and make some adjustments. And it's just an awesome skill that they're taking with them, you know, again, that goes on a resume, something that you can walk out the door and get a job doing. Taking care these vending machines, and vending machines are there everywhere.
Yeah, they are. They are. That's incredible. Yeah, I've seen some. I've been in the bank when there's a local guy here that does that very business, and the coins, lots of coins, lots and lots of coins. I know that they take credit cards now too, so you know, you can pay $10 for a water in the Houston airport through a vending machine. But yeah, I know because I paid it because I wanted that water really badly. And we were running to, I remember we were running to a flight that we didn't have any time. And it was like, I've got to have a water. And so did the card, got the water, ran, didn't even have the receipt. I told my director of finance, I was like, I have no idea what I paid for in that water, but I got a water because I needed it. So when you see this crazy charge, you're going to understand. But absolutely, you know, and that's and you pay for where you are, right? So it's amazing. Yeah,
but it's a whole job. It's a whole job. And so we're just really trying to prepare the students to have real skills that go on their resume that they can then just take into practice and go out and be successful. And again, like I said, not graduate to the couch.
Yeah I love that. I love that. And I'm sure your parents must absolutely love the fact that you're preparing their kids to be productive citizens, right?
One thing that's really amazing, Janet, is they might be in the campus-based 18 plus program. You know, that means they're 18 years old. And then they go to the program at the food bank, our RISE program. And within really a couple weeks, you can see the maturity level just blossom because we take them out of the school space. Mm-hmm. They don't think of themselves as students anymore.
Right. Yeah.
They're taking responsibility as young adults of going to work every day. And it's incredible. The parents just come back even at the first semester and tell us, it's amazing how much my child has grown up just in this short amount of time. Mm-hmm. And we've had students that barely talked. And then they go into that setting, and then now you can't get them to stop talking. They just blossom because we treat them like adults. We treat them like fully functioning human beings that are capable of a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's so fun to get to see them grow.
Yeah, and give them that equity, right? Give them that ability to be who they were made to be. Excuse me. So, we are out of time. I could talk to you for another hour. I really could, Ryan. I really, really could. So tell people where they can go to learn a little bit more about what you guys are doing there.
Sure. We have a pretty good website at cvisd.org. And then our special services page. It's pretty robust as far as all the things that are available there. I try to make in public education, you know, we big borrow and steal ideas all the time, right? So
absolutely.
I just try to put it all out there. Because mm-hmm. if it benefits our students, it's going to benefit other people's students too. So we just try to include everything that we can in that space on our special services page. I'm also on Twitter, not as active as I probably should be, but I'd really try to post just some of the good happenings of things that our students are doing throughout the district on that page as well. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know, can I include some links in the show notes or something like that?
Yeah, we can do that later. Yeah, well, absolutely. And our post-production people can help with stuff like that. So, because again, this is about you guys and making sure that people can find you and see what you're doing. It's incredible. And it matters, you know, it matters what you're doing and those kids. And oh, I love it so much.
Thanks.
It's so fun to talk to people that get, I mean, I talk to superintendents and I talk to a lot of people that do amazing things across education because of course we want to do that. But special education is my heart. You know, it's so much a part because we're servants. You know, there's just a certain thing that you have and across education, we love those kids, those special needs kids, and they have such an amazing heart for the world. And they're some of the happiest people that you will meet because they just don't get caught up in all the crazy stuff that you and I sometimes get caught up in. And it's so I love your passion. I love what you guys are doing. So thank you. Ryan, for coming on Brighter Together, because you are making the world a brighter place by the work that you're doing.
Thank you. We're really trying out here. It's my passion and my purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again.
Thanks, Janet.